What I'm going to talk about now, what I'm going to move on to now is, in effect, what has... That was part of the research program by way of, if you like, informing some of the questions that we would like to get more detailed answers on. So that stuff was a combination of known knowns and maybe less well-known knowns, but effectively it was out there. Much of it was written in Chinese, but it was available for those that have access to that. What I'm going to now concentrate on is to give you a flavour of the research outputs that we have created as part of this programme. And I'm going to start off by telling you why we concentrated on these two things, and then give you a snippet of the results, missing out most of the technical detail and trying to concentrate on the results themselves. So, what I call research output number one is looking at interfactor and interfuel substitution possibilities, price elasticities of demand for these particular energy inputs we're going to talk about, and the energy inputs that we're going to concentrate on are gasoline, diesel, coal and electricity. We incorporated paraffin, which is again an important rural sector fuel supply or fuel source. I think we cobbled that together in gasoline or diesel, but these are some of the main fuel sources. Labour, capital and energy are the factors that we want to concentrate on in a pretty straightforward interfactor substitution possibility model. Why are we doing this? Why is it useful? Or why do we think it's useful? Well, first of all, prior to this research, there were no numbers available or numbers that we felt were trustworthy or based upon sound econometrics which told us anything about interfactor, interfuel substitution possibilities in China. Why does that really matter? Well, I've made quite a case of the fact that coal is in plentiful and relatively cheap supply, and it's got a lot of bad connotations attached to it. But effectively, if we're going to try and inform policymakers about trying to make some choices, then they need to be informed about what the substitution possibilities are between the factors of production, energy for capital, energy for labour, and also fuel substitution, coal for oil, oil for electricity, etc. The complication, and some of you might have already anticipated this, is when we're looking at substitution possibilities between coal and electricity, where most electricity is created by coal, these become complementary rather than substitutes in terms of how they've been produced. And we can't disentangle this effect because we don't have data on intermediate inputs. So with that caveat in mind, we went on to see as much as we could say about interfuel and interfactor substitution possibilities. One of the things, in case I forget, that we got out of this, which was, again, in hindsight, incredibly obvious, but doesn't seem obvious before you start, is that there are significant substitution possibilities between energy and labour in China, whereas in most OECD countries, you'd be thinking about substitution possibilities between energy and capital. That becomes something of a positive if you recognise the amount of labour that's available in China. It becomes something of a negative if you think at the relative efficiency of labour versus capital in production. So why are we doing it? Well, the numbers weren't there. Why are we doing it? The numbers we hope are going to be useful. And there certainly has been a lot of interest in reading this stuff. The second part of the research looks at whether there is a degree of integration in terms of energy prices across China, and to a lesser extent where there's an integration of prices domestically and internationally. And the way that we go about this is to look at whether the law of one price in energy types exists across China. The law of one price, as it suggests, is looking to see whether the price of energy in one place, oil, gasoline, is the same as the price of oil or gasoline or diesel in some other part of China. And that law of one price is one of the fundamental laws that we teach our students we should be looking for. Of course, the law of one price assumes there are no transport costs, there are no impediments, and I've just told you a story about the importance of transport costs and shipping this stuff around. But it seemed a sensible thing to look at the time, partly to see whether the reforms that we've been talking about in terms of the energy market have been reflected in the things that we can measure, which are fuel prices. So are energy markets domestically well integrated in terms of energy market prices? And again, why is this important? Well, you would expect that the policymakers that are making reforms in China are making them for a particular reason and might be interested to know whether their reforms have had any effect at all on prices. And as I say, until this data was recently collated, it wasn't really known, because no one had the data to be able to test for these things. The second aspect of this is, if you're wanting to model the effects of reforms, you're wanting to simulate the effects of reforms, if you're wanting to forecast what the reforms have done with a view to making a case whether you should have more or fewer of them, it's nice to know whether you have any quantitative evidence upon which to base it. Okay, so let's have a look at some of the results from this first new piece of research that I'm going to discuss here. And this is where maybe some of you will switch off. Some of you will switch off more. Some of you might wake up. Some of you might leave the room. All of these things are possibilities that I have as scenarios. Well, what is this about? Well, these are some measures of the elasticities of substitution and the price elasticities of factor demand when we're looking at inter-factor substitution. What does all that economic speak really mean? Well, we're looking at here, inter-factor substitution. We're looking to see whether energy is substitutable for labour. Is labour substitutable for capital? Is capital substitutable for energy, if I've not already said that one? And these elasticities of substitution give you a measure about whether there are substitutable possibilities. Are they strong? Are they weak? And in this particular case, are they significantly different from zero, i.e., do we believe that they are strong or weak or neutral? And also gives you some measure of whether they are actually complements. By complements, we mean as we increase one, we increase the other. They're not substitutes for each other, but there's a requirement to have more of one if you have more of the other. And those things are important if you're trying to advise or give some data for reformers. If they're trying to say, we want to reduce the amount of energy, we could use price of energy, we could tax, or we could use subsidies on labour or other sorts of instruments. But if these things are complements rather than substitutes, then your policy has to be tailored around whether it's a substitute, you do less of this if you do more of that, or if it's a complement, you do more of this if you do more of that. And if the elasticities of substitution are quite small, are quite low, you need a big punch. You need a big instrument to make it happen. Whereas if it's large, you have a small instrument to make it happen. So these elasticities of substitution are important numbers to know if you're going to make predictions or help policy. So what do the numbers tell you on here? Well, I'm going to give you a slide that summarizes it in a moment, but just let me show you where these numbers are coming from. So on the left-hand side here, we have elasticities of substitution between the particular factors. So again, those with binoculars or very young eyes can see this says sigma EK, which is looking at the substitution between electricity and capital. Again, as most of the economists know, capital starts with a K, not a C. So we always have capital with a K rather than a C. So E and K is a substitution between energy and capital. E and L, energy and labour. K and L, capital and labour. And these are the values, which are all nicely negative when we look at EE, KK and LL. But the others in here, EK, EL and KL, are positive 0.8, positive 0.6, positive KL, positive 0.3. But the one between energy and labour at 0.6 is the only one that's statistically significant. What are those things telling you? The positives tell you that these things are substitutes. And down the bottom here, we have some other Greek letters and EEs, EKs, ELs, again, which are looking at price elasticities, own price, and cross-price elasticities. And just to summarise, for those of you who can't read those numbers, what these things actually mean in terms of inter-factor substitution possibilities. So what that table tells you is the substitution possibilities between energy and labour are almost as large as those between capital and energy. And we get that from energy and labour and energy and capital. That's 0.6, that's 0.8. I'm saying that's almost as large as this one. The difference is that's not statistically different from zero. Poorly estimated, that is. And these are, and in a technical sense, these are Allen partial elasticities of substitution. The cross-price elasticities also give you the same sort of effect. Capital and labour are only slightly substitutable in terms of a sigma KL of 0.4, but they're not statistically significant. There's no complementarity that we find in terms of these inter-factor substitutions. So we have the possibility that we can substitute. The isoquants are going to be smooth as opposed to re-NTF. They're not going to be complementary, but some of those substitution elasticities are not being picked up significantly, and they're not particularly large. What this one does is a similar sort of process, but it's looking at substitution between fuels. So the fuels here are coal, gasoline, electricity and diesel. And in the same sort of way, we get these elasticities of substitution between coal and gasoline, coal and electricity, coal and diesel, gas, and that's what we've got because all the rest of them are owned. Again, we get nice negative ones on coal, coal, and gasoline, gasoline, and the same for diesel. But then, again, what we're looking at here is whether there's substitution or substitutability or complementarity. This is coal and gasoline. This has got a negative in front of it. So this is the one that looks slightly odd because it's suggesting that these things are complements. Coal and electricity, we get positives and substitutes. Coal and diesel, we get these negatives and highly significant. So gasoline and coal look as though they're complements. And I'll say that this in part is, I think, related to the fact that so much coal is shipped around, particularly using diesel-based trains. So we have some substitutability of factors, of fuels, some complementarity in terms of fuels. And this just simply summarizes this substitution versus complementarity. Remember, substitution means you have more of one, you have less of the other. Complements mean you have more of both. Skip that one for now. I can see we're running out of time. We've got 10 minutes. Doing quite well, Andrew, on my own. I've spoken a couple of times about this energy intensity issue. And again, one new aspect of the research that we've been undertaking is trying to decompose what has led to the changing energy intensity in China. And what this decomposition method has allows us to do is, get this right, children, is to break down the total change in energy intensity that's coming through this column here. So the first row is looking at the national level. Here is seven regions, and the regions are identified down the bottom for those in the front row. And it looks at it in terms of a budget effect, what's happening to energy intensity as the price of energy changes, substitution effects between energy capital and labour, and the technological effect over here. So concentrating on these substitution effects, concentrating on the national level, we have this 7.2% increase in energy intensity, which is really not caused at all by these substitution things. So labour is declining capital, but when you net these energy, capital and labour out, it's tiny. The budget effect is 19%, but the biggest effect of all of these is coming from the fact that technological change is leading to an increase in energy intensity. Almost a quarter of this energy intensity is being caused by using energy-intensive new technologies. So that just summarises what I've said. At the national level, we've got a 7.3% increase in energy intensity. Some of that's coming through being affected by substitution and production effects, but very little. Budget effects, 25% increase in energy is leading to a 19% reduction, but most of this is coming from this use of more energy intensive technologies. And I thought I had another slide, but we've had enough slides anyway. The regional effects, oh, it's in the previous one. Here's a region that's here. Apart from region 3, which is identified down here, which has got a declining energy intensity, we're getting a similar sort of effect coming through all the other regions where it's technological change using more energy intensive technologies that is leading to this recent upswing in energy intensity in production. So quickly going through this next bit, the second part of this new research is looking at this idea of the law of one price. Is there convergence in prices of fuels spatially? The technical stuff about this is related to time series tests of stationarity or non-stationarity unit routes and co-integration. Again, if you know that, you know that. If you don't, you're not interested. Let me tell you what the conclusions of this research, part of the research, are. You don't want that one. So here we have results related to the 35 separate markets, i.e. this is the national level results for all 35 of the markets that are sampled in this this data set. And a whole bunch of statistics here. The one at the top is the one I'm going to concentrate on, but I'm going to give you a summary for those of you that haven't got binoculars. And the things to notice here are that we have some results for all four fuels over the period 97 to 2005, the total sample period 97 to 99, 2000 to 2005. Why have we broken this period, this full period into two? Well, when we look at the reform process, when we look at a whole bunch of other things, it suggests that we should be separating out these two periods if we're looking for the time path, what is happening to prices over time and over regions. And the bottom line at the national level is that there is very little evidence that electricity and coal prices are being governed by the law of one price nationally. That is, that there's a significant divergence in prices for coal and electricity across different parts of China. But unsurprisingly, all these zeros over here are telling us that the idea that price differences in gasoline and diesel are different at different points in China. Oh, that again. The idea that the difference in price of gasoline and diesel is significantly different across China, that hypothesis has been rejected for all the periods, for all the sub-periods. So what does this mean? It means that gasoline and diesel prices are much more closely related to market prices across all of China than things like coal and electricity. And that makes a lot of sense. Even though we're shifting coal all over the place, electricity itself is a bit more difficult to shift from one place to another if there's a price difference, if you haven't got a cable in between the two. But if the price of diesel and gasoline is significantly different in one place compared to another, you shift it and the market price changes. So what this is suggesting is that the market in diesel and gasoline is working relatively efficiently, or at least is responding to price differences, whereas coal and electricity is less so. Part of what some of the results give. Stick that one. In the last couple of minutes I've got left here, what sort of conclusions and issues and possible policy direction reading off the slide can we draw, or have I chosen to draw, from this whole bunch of numbers, whole bunch of stories that I've been telling you? Well, unless there's a significant change in what we have been seeing over the last 20 years, it's unlikely that there'll be anything that will prevent a significant increase in China's primary energy consumption, and it seems very difficult to conceive that electricity generation will not be dominated by coal, and that will have almost inevitable short run, maybe even long run effects on emissions. Chinese policymakers therefore have to start to think about, or have made public if they're already thinking about them, or put into practice if they've thought about them and want to do something about it. They have to prioritise and maybe legislate to support a range of options which will allow economic growth in a world where emissions are attracting more and more attention. We only have to look at what has happened in New Zealand over the last few days on the basis of what is regarded as a rather liberal approach to emissions. This is massive in comparison. So, challenges, possible solutions. Again, I've described this as motherhood and apple pie. Most of this is not rocket science, but it's a way to conclude. Very clear that economic growth requires energy-intensive production, or certainly in the Chinese context, it requires energy-intensive production. And we're seeing this already coming through in increasing energy intensity in production as the changing nature of production goes from heavy-duty, simple manufactured goods into more sophisticated manufactured goods that themselves require energy-intensive technologies. If you want to increase energy, if you want to reduce energy intensity, then increasing energy efficiency is clearly one route to that. And one way to get energy efficiency, we propose, is to make sure that prices of energy are more correctly reflecting energy costs rather than being manipulated in a way that would satisfy central planners type notions. And this has been one of the reasons why we've described the reforms as gradual. You cannot simply allow electricity prices, it seems, in China to fluctuate and rise to levels that might be required to reflect their input costs, because of the political implications of going from a very low to a market-based price for electricity. Likewise, for gasoline. This is the mother of apple pie stuff. Increase research and production on clean renewables. Some of you will walk away with another reason to increase research and production on clean renewables. Biomass in China is renewable, but it's not clean. Biomass has significant spillovers on food prices. Biomass has a large potential, but we still have to note the reality that coal is in major supply and relatively cheap, although it is now more closely reflecting world prices. I think one thing that has been significantly neglected, because we didn't know about it, or I certainly didn't know about it, and I'm not assuming that you didn't, but I'm assuming many didn't, that much of the energy, much of the coal production is shifted enormous distances in China. Now, that will not change with urbanisation, because you can't change where coal is actually mined, and in effect, what might happen is urbanisation leads to a more efficient use of coal on the East Coast, but you're still going to have a situation where the supply of coal and the demand for coal are dislocated. One way around this is to look at maybe more micro-based production of electricity closer to the source, but again, with 115 years of coal, it's going to be a hard push. And urbanisation has some positive effects because it shifts people away from the rural sector, but as any of you would know, it has some pretty negative effects in terms of traffic congestion. I think that's my last slide. We'll see how it goes. Oh, institutional reform. That's pretty straightforward. And we're finished. Okay, thank you very much.